Upadaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Sri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namane
Thank you.
Thank you.
life, going, seeing it as this material life that wants to get out of this material life and go back to Godhead. And knows that he has to somehow serve Krishna under the direction of the spiritual master. That's a disciples, although that many disciples, each one should feel that he has a meaningful personal relationship. And pick it up in one way or another. And it can always be improved and increased, like that Prabhupada said to me, you love me, then I love you. Way that way, we can improve our relationship. It's not static. Thought that if I served my GBC man, that was being the spiritual master. And I said, it is. And then he said, well, I think I've misunderstood that. And then he said, more or less what he was saying was that he had, somebody told him that by pleasing that other person, that completely took care of his relationship with the spiritual master. Now, he didn't have to write to a spiritual master, or practically even think of a spiritual master, under this slogan that by serving this other person, the spiritual master's pleased. It's like it's a very simplistic idea, or it comes from a personal idea, that was all that had to be done. I said, yes, that's pleasing to the spiritual master, but still, you have to have a relationship. If your father sent you to live or work with, say, another teacher or, say, an uncle, and he instructed you, now you go with him, and if I hear that you're doing nicely working with him, I'll be pleased. So when the son goes and does that, he doesn't think that now my relationship with my father is finished. But he thinks, I have to. By serving this person, I'll please my spiritual father. I'll keep the father image. If I please my uncle, I'll please my father. But then he still will want to tell his father, this is what I'm doing. And like that. It's not that the relationship is completely consumed or limited to pleasing the spiritual, to pleasing the representative, in that case, the temple president. Then if one doesn't have, if one's not serving that way, then he has to try to relate whatever activities he's doing to the instructions he got from his spiritual master. Without such a working with such authority. Spiritual master wants to see the disciples prospering in spiritual life, happy. And of course that's not possible. He wants to at least see them loyal to the spiritual path and with some beginnings and realizations about how Krishna is in control and we're always trying to serve Krishna. On my birthday this year I spoke that lecture and distributed where I was emphasizing the spiritual master is the servant of his disciples. So they should give him a chance to serve him. They should give him a chance to help them to serve him. Die. Thought you had something else to do tonight.
That's right.
They should give the spiritual master a chance to serve him. My Krishna loves a bit. Just asking people to, I'm not speaking from any book or anything, I'm asking if anyone has any question or would like me to speak on something particular. A question or something. Mata was just asking me about some questions about relationship with the spiritual master and the disciple.
Sometimes circumstances seem to dictate that I have to work harder at my job, or maybe even the temple president or an authority says that I shouldn't worry about my 16 rounds, I've got to go out and collect Lakshmi, the temple's in trouble. So how far can the disciple go like that? Or is it that we make a vow and we're initiated and we'll chant 16 rounds and follow the four rules. So some devotees place more emphasis on chanting 16 rounds than others do. So how should your disciples feel about the chanting 16 rounds?
Acharya asked Lord Chaitanya of all the instructions, what is most important? He said the chanting is the most important. So please do that. Try to do it. I don't want to. I'm doing it.
And we recommend that do that if you really want to have success. I think it's a matter of how you teach these things. But I don't. It's not that if somebody doesn't do it that we condemn them or say they're going to hell. But it's a scientific process, and so we try to encourage people to do what they should do for spiritual life, Krishna consciousness, and then we can't waffle, so to speak, and tell them that they will get results without doing the basic activities. So it may be important how a person is. You know, we try to. So if for the time being somebody isn't chanting, he can still have a good relationship with his spiritual master, and that the spiritual master sees him as somebody who wishes to be chanting again, or who for the time being is having some regretful condition. And the spiritual master keeps patiently telling him, this is what you have to do. There's that instruction with Rishabhadev and his sons. Rishabhadev says, a father or a guru should not become angry with his disciples even if they can't carry out the instruction. Just as any preacher, when you preach to people, they may not respond, but it's your business to still be loving and patient with them. If you see a little spark, you keep fanning it. But it shouldn't not to the point that change the philosophy. Rather than actually the disciple or would-be disciple would ultimately be disappointed in such a spiritual master, because he wants spiritual life at all, and he wants to be encouraged to chant again or to have faith in the chanting again. The spiritual master always says that. I always like that statement that George Harrison said, who had more than just a passing relationship with Prabhupada for a while, it was quite serious. And he said, should we put the Prabhupada Lilamrita, that he always said the same thing no matter who was there. He said, okay, when I was there, he wasn't speaking any different than when anybody else was there. And he said, and I liked that he never changed what he said, that he didn't say one time, oh, I said Chan Hare Krishna, well, I made a mistake, now we're doing something else. And we always said the same thing. Now there was a person who couldn't really do it, but at least he appreciated, and to the degree that Prabhupada was a spiritual master, it was because he saw that he's teaching the parampara, he's teaching chanting of Hare Krishna, that's what you should do, and I wish I could do it. It was a question of acceptance. Now, if someone actually argued on the principle of the chanting and didn't agree that chanting should be done, then they would be less of a disciple at heart. So there's like the inability to do something that you agree should be done, and then the actual lack of faith is... That's when the relationship starts to not be a relationship of guru and disciple, but for a disciple not to be able to carry out the orders. To one degree or another, we all have that. Only a perfect disciple would be able to do everything. So the spiritual master keeps trying to encourage. That's why I felt a little difficulty in answering your question. One could answer very quickly and say, what the spiritual master wants, but he knows he can't always get that from the disciples. So he looks for the good heart, the good intentions, and then teaches the same thing to everyone, always. This must be done. spiritual master as a servant of his disciples and as a servant of his simple succession is doing, in one sense, a very simple task. It's a very delicate and profound thing that he's doing, but he does it only if he takes the humble position, as Prabhupada would say, of the post peon, and just carry the message of Krishna consciousness, and then people can receive it. The same thing that's coming down from Krishna, like the mango that's coming down the tree being handed from person to person. So it's a very great thing that he can do, but he has to do it in a consistent, simple way of repeating the instructions of his spiritual master. Prabhupada did that. Tried to accept everyone's service, and they were ready to take it. I gave that example that one time. When I was just meeting Prabhupada, I asked him a question. I said, in front of others, I said that I could be many different kinds of persons. I'm not even sure who I am, but I could be many different persons in order to please particular people. So what kind of a person would Krishna like me to be? We know we're supposed to please Krishna. So I was revealing by that a rather confused and complicated mentality. And Prabhupada said, referring to me in front of the others, he said, "This boy, Steve, he gives money, he gives donations, and he does typing work." This is very nice. You others should do this too. So he said, "Well, why didn't he answer your question? Why did he say that?" But it was kind of it was actually like a perfect demonstration of his rulership. In one sense, he was answering in such a simple way to say that here I see you as a servant of Krishna. You're rendering service, so this is who you should be. The spiritual master tries to draw out the eternal servanthood of the disciple that he's talking to, and that's how he serves him. He can accept the service and direct the person in the service. He can instruct, and maybe even, like Prabhupada himself, he had to be defeated by his spiritual master. He didn't want to be the eternal servant of Krishna. He wanted to be the servant of India. So he may, in the beginning, have to be defeated, wrestled with. But at some point, the disciple, as a living being with free will, has to agree, "Yes, I want eternal servanthood of God, and can you help me? I think you can by taking your instructions. By serving you, I feel that I'll be able to serve Krishna." And then from time to time, he, just like Arjuna, he may like lose the whole thing and then come up with something that he shouldn't be coming up with. Krishna says, "Why are you asking me this? You've already been instructed about this." So that's the way he's a disciple. He has to keep being instructed. That is it. And Arjuna, at least, he would say, I've just lost it completely. I don't want to do it anymore. I don't know what to do. But here I am. Please tell me what to do." There's always approaching the spiritual master in that way. So we see the phenomena of people accepting a spiritual master and then going in different ways. Some of them completely breaking that relationship. Some not being able to follow so well, but still feeling that the relationship is there, and then coming at different, some doing well, and then later not doing well, and doing well later. So spiritual master is supposed to be steady there. He may not be able to solve everyone's individual problem, but he has to be there sense, ready when they're ready enough, when they're fit enough. And when they're ready to serve, then he's ready to guide them. That's a personal relationship. It would depend on how the Shiksha Guru wanted to be adjusted. Addresses are personal. So you would ask Shiksha Guru, may I call it, may we call you?
Back a bit, and he needs to be once again convinced of Krishna consciousness, or why should I once again participate, you know, join in this way.
Well, I think it's a spiritual master's duty to take that challenge, or that to try to again convince disciple, in a personal exchange. You have to be, honest, and one has to ask the relevant questions. That could be a relevant question, that I accepted. I'm not sure I any longer accept them. So here's my doubt. Then, we have to see whether the person thought, well. No, now my doubts are stronger than my faith in this person or in this process, or whether he... It's a dynamic personal thing, but that's a genuine, honest thing. It happens. And so I think it's a spiritual master... To try to answer those questions again.
try to supply more insight or to address the new attitude or the new experiences of devotees who work in a certain way for a while and then leave that whole framework. One thing we see a lot of, and it's sort of implied in some of your questions, Madhu, is there's like a tension between, and also in ISKCON, as it has happened, in disappointments in institutional life, and related to disappointments in the spiritual master, and disappointments in faith in Krishna and the scriptures. And sometimes these things get mixed up. What's really unfortunate, if there are disappointments in persons, which and institutional life, and then one really unreasonably gives up his service to Guru and Krishna, making somehow a definite connection in his mind that the whole thing is one, lumps the whole thing together, that this happened to me, therefore I don't have faith in Krishna anymore, spiritual master. That's sometimes a hasty judgment or a mistaken idea. But sometimes it may be more than that. That you have to work with a certain group of people or else you can't serve Krishna. The person can say, well, I can't handle that. And then it can't be so confined. You have three different ways to engage people in Krishna consciousness. But sometimes the disciple has that unfortunate misunderstanding. Thinks he knows what the Krishna consciousness movement is and he rejects it, whereas all he knows is really a superficial impression of some misdeeds in his temple or someplace. But the Krishna consciousness movement is an eternal parampara which manifests in different ways. He doesn't really know the Krishna consciousness movement, just like we make fun of the Hindus who sometimes say, I know Krishna, I know everything about Krishna. They don't even know about Krishna. What they mean is, I don't think he's very important. I learned about Krishna from my grandmother, and I know about it, but neither do I want to surrender to Krishna. But I know about it. They don't know about it. So we may be justified in rejecting some real bad experiences that we had in ISKCON or something. But we should take responsibility for what it actually was and don't think that it means that we really penetrated to the bottom of the process of Bhakti Yoga and that we see it as defective. It says about Srimad Bhagavatam, who knows the Srimad Bhagavatam? Lord Shiva knows, Vyasadeva may know or may not know. In other words, no one really knows completely what Srimad Bhagavatam is or what Krishna is. We just know a little bit. But if we think, oh, I know what chanting is, I tried it and it doesn't work. I know what association of devotees is. It means that you have such and such bad experiences like I had. And I know what spiritual master is. Maybe you never really developed your relationship with your spiritual master properly. Maybe he was having a problem too in relating to you. You can make another, maybe back to your problem, you can make another attempt at something. Just like we know in loving relationships, like with husband and wife, you're supposed to not take a fight so seriously, but try to work it out. And that attitude of, all right, let's, we have to work on our loving relationship. It doesn't just happen. So it's worth working on. And of all traditional relationships, it's like marriage is sacred. It shouldn't be quickly dissolved by claims of incompatibility or divorce. The relationship of guru and disciple shouldn't be taken lightly and thrown off, I have another guru, now I have another guru. I still remember very soon after being initiated, I was walking with one of the devotees on the Lower East Side, and we remember where we were. We were leaving the storefront, going past the gas station next door, and he said, well, now we're initiated. And I can't remember exactly, but something to the effect of, so I accept Swamiji as my guru, but we'll have to see where, you know, where life takes me. He said, and in the future, I may accept a different guru. And I was just shocked to hear that and to think of that. I could barely understand what a guru was. But I know that by getting initiated, it means that you don't drop this and take another guru. What do you mean? We just got initiated. Swamiji's our guru. So it can be done, but it should only a sincere spiritual seeker would reject his guru only on some solid grounds that he was rejectable. And then you have the concept of Shiksha Guru, which is teachers who help us to serve the order of the spiritual master. Or sometimes, somehow or other, we need supplementation from just what our spiritual master teaches. But the supplementation should be to be complementary somehow or other. But my guru taught me, and I'm so dull or whatever it was, I couldn't completely absorb it from him. But now I'm beginning to understand what he said, and I'm also learning it in other ways. Including in the heart. Prabhupada says that in purport to 10.10, one may have a genuine spiritual master and be connected with a spiritual organization, and still he's not able to become successful. Then Krishna will directly help him. And Krishna, although we call Krishna the Chaitanya Guru, he can be called the Instructor Guru. But the spiritual master simply wants to see the disciple serving Krishna, serving the parampara.
Previous years, this conference is growing.
cup coming.
Thing. I don't want to just make some commentary, like sociological commentary about ISKCON, like so many scholars do, about what is wrong with ISKCON. And we're also for somebody to be familiar with the things that are wrong. But well, one answer is that ISKCON is now is recognized as a broader meaning. And as I was saying, it's really a very deep thing. So it's like the Ganges River. And even if it has a lot of dirty things in it, it's still the Ganges. And so therefore I would say that the movement and Prabhupada's movement is not fundamentally wrong, although it may be, you know, it did get a lot more polluted after his purifying Bapu left, and it got a lot of gook started showing up, but it's still fundamentally, the movement is what he taught, and even if a lot of people are misbehaving, his teachings are so strong and Prampara is eternal, that eventually those who weren't teaching the right thing or were misrepresenting left. And so that process of continuing to stay with Krishna conscious movement in one form or another should be pursued without losing basic faith. I can make this much commentary, and that is that a lot of people have lost faith, and so they don't want to be part of the ISKCON movement, but they want to pursue their Krishna consciousness. They have to be encouraged that they're still part of this movement. And those who are faithful to maintaining Prabhupada's temples, they certainly have to be encouraged. But we have to reach a point where we see that they both are part of a congregation, part of the flowing of the ISKCON movement, and work to purify it or to improve it. And for the time being, if it gets smaller, that in itself is not an overwhelming evidence of lack of hope. But whether it's actually attractive, whether it's actually pure, that's the big defect, not whether it's small or that they're less people. There are still defects, but I see it just as a period of, like transition. Using that Ganges example, aside from the fact that the Ganges has dirty things in it, also sometimes in the season it gets very, very small and dry. Sometimes it's very big, strong. So now it may be in that phase, but you can still touch it as the Ganges then. You can benefit. And then it will again come to another season. We're each responsible for our own spiritual life and for our service to Krishna and Guru. So, service to Prabhupada, we have to answer for that at the time of death. So, it will be all right if at the time of death or at the end of this life we say that I couldn't, I got married, or that's why I left the Association of Devotees, because I had to take care of this, and I thought I didn't want to be so much part of the institution and the authorities and management, or for another reason I did this.
But I went on with my Guru Seva and my Krishna Seva, and I always wanted to help spread Krishna consciousness. And so I served in this way. That's not a condemned position. But if we say, well, all this stuff started happening after Prabhupada left, and I had a real bad temple president, and the devotees were also superficial. And yes, that's true. So what did you do as a result of it? Did you practice your Guru Seva privately? No, I just decided that this is what Krishna is teaching, and this is... I decided the whole thing was bogus. And so I got into real estate. And so what about renunciation, the love of God? Well, it was that temple president. But we had a bad mother and father. So that wouldn't be an acceptable excuse. And like on the judgment day. But we'd say, well, you should have had the discerning power to understand the difference between the bad experiences, which were certainly real, and the need to take the spiritual life, and the fact that you did meet this did meet up with this excellent opportunity to practice bhakti yoga, and you shouldn't have thrown it out. It was a kind of test. And then the person would regret. Oh, yes, that's unfortunate when somebody gives up the whole service attitude, which may be Maya's trick also, so that we just do material activities again. And claim that we can actually feel a resentment and hurt for how we suffered in the spiritual institution or with people who were supposed to be spiritual. It's not easy to have such discerning ability. It's more like the grace of Krishna. We're very sincere, and even if you get mistreated, you still remain a faithful devotee. There are so many unfortunate chapters that have occurred, but because of some of the disorders that have occurred, we have to, and because of changing times, we have to accept more different kinds of people's offering of service. Not just there's only one way you can serve. Like that one boy asked the question here after the class. I was talking about the chanting, and he said, "The prayer of the chanting is, oh my Lord, please engage me in your service." So if somebody wasn't living in the temple, how could he chant? But how could he be praying? So the implication of his question was, the only way you could serve Krishna is in a temple. He just didn't understand how a person not living in the temple could chant Hare Krishna. And that would be a hypocrite. I said, well, the chanting itself is service. Oh Lord, please engage me in your service. If he's just chants, he's serving. So we have to accept that service may be done. But it's a mean trick of Maya if a person gives up the service attitude completely.
Yeah.
I've found that a personal experience.
There's one temple in the east, and there's people living around it. There's a farm, there's a mosquito nugget. And it was like a complete revolution. All the authorities have left, and it's just a little band of devotees there. So there was some devotee who was real bitter about the people at Hiranagari. And one of the reactions was that he wasn't chanting his rounds. And he would just openly say, it's because I feel disappointed by the politics and the people here. And I said, but who are the people here who have mistreated you? I just named the people who were there, who were just like completely non-political, simple people who were just trying to do the deity worship and a few other things, and had not even historically had anything to do with the things that disappointed this person. And it was like, it was so obvious, but he had to think about it and say, oh yeah. But no, I don't have anything against these devotees. But it had seemed like, well, he may have admitted that, he was thinking that it was, that they were still there. So that's true. But we have to expect that people, if they have suffered in that way, they don't want to, again, get into any situation where there might be some authorities who will also turn out to be like past authorities. That kind of thing happens, like you're saying. There just has to be a real lot of tolerance. Nobody should be righteous. We should feel righteous in terms of serving Krishna. That it's the right thing to do, but don't feel that my position is righteous because I live in the temple, or my position is righteous because I don't live in the temple. I earn my own money. I'm not one of those devotees. But we should feel that I'm just a tiny, fallen, living creature, and I'm living either in or out of the temple for certain reasons and certain weaknesses. That's granted. I'm trying to serve, and if I see anybody else trying to serve, I should give them the benefit of the doubt and try to encourage them. But we can point out the point that you're making, and point that out to people. Well, as far as their spiritual master, ask them to at least try to bring it up to him so it doesn't remain like a silent hate. And I think things can be improved. I know I've invited that. By inviting it, I got to hear some pretty stiff things from people to say that how I was implicated in how they suffered. But I asked for it, and then when they said it, I tried to reply, not just like, how dare you say this, but I tried to admit what I thought I'd done wrong, and then tried to still, sort of along the lines we've been discussing, tell them they shouldn't give up their spiritual life. And even if they didn't accept it, it was good that we had an open exchange, and it always seems to improve something. towards steps for further improvement. So that rock bottom, at least they should say, all right, here's what's on my mind, here's what I think happened, and here's how I think that my spiritual master also failed me in this situation. In a confidential exchange, they say that. And then I had some exchange like that with some disciple. And then I said back, and they said, but I know I've disappointed you, so what do you think? What do you think of what I've done? Then I honestly said what I thought, you know, how I was disappointed in what they had done. But then you have to see whether you want to continue spiritual life or not. So, if by such discussions you can no longer blame Krishna and blame the spiritual master, then that would be a gain. Or if you admit that you do feel some resentment, and then you can hear your spiritual master or hear Krishna's explanation, it'll be good for you, rather than just remaining quiet, bottled up with kind of hateful feelings or resentful feelings. Take responsibility. Like the ultimate or extreme, real extreme example of that is the whole like anti-cult thing. That a person joins, say just aside from other movements, they join this movement. They weren't brainwashed because we have no capacity to brainwash. They joined, they surrendered, they did all kinds of things, and then later they really resented that they did it, and they don't want to admit that they did it because they wanted to do it. They say, no, somebody made me do it, somebody brainwashed me. So they're never going to grow unless they admit that, yeah, that was me. I joined that, and I did those things, and I thought it was great. And now I see that it's not what I want to do, but I did it. Rather than blame. I mean, the whole trip, as we can call it, of everyone going out and selling paintings and making as much money as possible and having his own acharya and all that, it's such a collective thing that was done. And to the degree that it was a mistake, it's such a collective thing. But to just say, I was a victim. It's not even taking responsibility. Maybe the leaders are more to blame, and they should accept that. But we should be careful not to think that we were just victimized and throughout the whole spiritual life. So to the degree that the leaders were misleading, it's very tragic, and they have to be very repentant, because to agree others were innocent, they just did whatever they were told. But still the responsibility is there for the so-called innocent follower not to give up the spiritual life. Like Prabhupada says, some old Indian saying, that someone came home and he saw all his dishes had been robbed in his house. So he sits on the ground and says, now I'll just eat off the ground. No, that's life. You have to get new dishes. Start again. The spiritual life is the most important thing to keep up. And just because we were disappointed, we can't stop it. So we have as much as we can, a close praying relationship with Krishna and with other devotees, have some faith, then we just find another way to serve. Say, oh, Krishna, I don't know why you're doing this, but now I have to serve you and I have to find a way to serve you. we who maintain some faith, we shouldn't get so, you know, depressed or dried out by the fact of what you're pointing out, that the movement is diminishing and the people are going away. You just have to have a good heart and keep going and wait for better times and to see the good in the present also.
Okay.
All right.